If you listen to the calls that come to our church from outside, there are two particular calls that come to Methodist congregations in particular on this day. One of them is that organization that we treasure and love and admire, which is known as Action for Children, that Methodist charity which we honor and support, and we might like to know that in fact it's celebrating its 150th birthday at this time. But that's not quite where we're going to go today, but I felt as a preacher we should at least acknowledge that very precious work. And there was something, I think, in one of the news items on television in the past week, which again underlined the value and importance of that work, which is a work that comes from all that church is about. But the other one that intrigues me a little, and possibly is why you're going to get it thrown at you this morning, is that many people, not just in Methodism, but in other churches too and beyond, denote this Sunday as Sea Sunday. And that's S-E-A, by the way, not something about looking. Sea Sunday. A particular organization is known as the Mission to Seamen, but there are others as well that do similar jobs. They are very important indeed for the people whose life is spent on the sea. Seafarers near and far are thought about when they have distress and need. There are those Christian organizations that will welcome them and shelter them and provide for them and build them up again to go back into the exciting but very dangerous times that can be upon the sea. For some people, of course, we don't take it for granted. After all, the sea isn't just down the road here. We're not perhaps in quite the same way in touch with it as some people are. But there are folk who work all the time nearly on the sea. Fortunately, I think they do get escape and holiday at times, but working there on the sea is what they're about. And it doesn't take us very long to think, gosh, how safe is that? What about the danger? And it's important, therefore, that on Sea Sunday, we just spend a moment thinking of those organizations, thinking of the generosity that they would like, thinking of the help they want to offer, and thinking of the ministry to all sorts of people, Christian and not, who work on the sea and live in sight of its particular danger. On the other hand, of course, there's another one that's a bit nearer home. It goes under the initials of RNLI. I suspect there are times when, if you're down at the seaside, you will see the place from which the boat goes out, its berthing. And you may even see on one of those days when you can actually get in there and feel the thing and look at it and find out what it's like. And of course, there is a hope too here, because there's no money behind this. This particular organization, which does such valued work, such rescuing, sometimes at the times of horrible danger. It doesn't, of course, have any grants. It's not government supported. And therefore, if that aspect of work on the sea is going to last, then it's going to need us to dip into our pockets. Sometimes, of course, we encounter the sea when we perhaps do a little bit of ferrying, because the sea sometimes spreads into the rivers. One of the nearest places I can think of is Kingston, and a little boat ride down to Hampton Court and back, perhaps on a nice sunny day with just a cup of tea somewhere, and a very enjoyable experience that would be. Much happens, of course, on the sea. So much of what we need in this country hasn't come in somebody's pocket or in a van or in a car. It's come, of course, across the sea. We, of course, are familiar with the lovely channel that we've got out there, and I suspect many of us, in fact, take crossing it, or getting underneath it, or flying over it, as, well, you know, one of those things you do, isn't it, if you want to get out there. One thing I notice, particularly in some of the folk I've met who have now retired and have got a bit of money in their pocket, I have to add, the great fashion of going off on a cruise and actually sort of living on the sea for several weeks, which can be exciting or at times might be a little bit of an upheaval. And of course, there are all sorts of wonderful experiences we hear of where rescue has gone, lives have been saved, and people have put themselves to extreme risk and pain and danger to do that. But just on Sea Sunday, let's just reflect about the sea a little bit more. I stopped to think, well, how much of the surface of our globe is not land, but sea? Well, I turned inevitably to the computer, and so for what I'm going to assert, I have to say, is something that I picked up from the internet, and that is that 70% of the surface of our world, it's not safe, hard land you can, you know, bang about on, it is the sea. What a lot of water it is. Some of it flowing free and some of it frozen. The sea isn't, of course, local for all of us. I mean, we've got to at least get down to Worthing or Brighton, I suppose, about the nearest places we could get to. It's not always accessible. But in times of extreme weather, I think we've only got to think across to the southern part of the United States at the moment, when the sea is enraged, what a damage. What a damage. How powerful it can be, and how utterly helpless we mere humans are in the face of that. Do you recall those very sad occasions that appear in the news sometimes when here is the sea and there is a kind of cliff and there are some houses along there on the top, and the sea decides to have a go at the cliff, and sadly, houses disappear. The sea perhaps isn't always the best friend of everybody. And yet the sea appeals so much. Isn't that where we like to go on the holiday? You know, how glad we are to be at the seaside kind of thing. It seems for many people it's only really sea and holiday if we've got all that water somewhere around for us to play with and to enjoy. But we should never, of course, forget the danger even of the safest sea. And perhaps there's something else that should bother us much more as a society, not just in church, but humans generally. What a mess sometimes happens. You see sometimes in the news, you know, when the beach has been absolutely full, but the picture is after people have gone. And the amount of rubbish that is absolutely left there. And to me, you know, it makes me very angry and feeling very disgusted that people want to spoil what is meant to be beautiful and good because they largely can't be bothered. Yes, there are places when ferocious power comes at sea and destruction is the result. Perhaps, though, we should remember, too, amongst the workings in the sea, those places of ferrying across. Sometimes if you want to get to the other side, if you're going to do it on land, you've got to go a very long way or hope somebody's thought of building a bridge. But then there are the people there we just take for granted. We get on the boat, perhaps for 10 minutes, for a quarter of an hour, and, you know, forget that there's somebody's life's work. Surely I would say that the sea, in all the ways we encounter it and observe it, is a gift of God to be enjoyed and to be respected. A couple of small asides. There have been occasions when baptism becomes something that somebody needs to engage in for themselves or somebody else. And there are those who say, I want that baptism in the sea. I want really to be under that water and to be washed, as it were, absolutely. I suspect, though, that might be a little bit difficult for very small children and not all that easy to arrange, and maybe there may even be bylaws against it, I don't know. The other thought that occurred to me in that mischievous mind I sometimes have, I suppose at least once in the service I've got to mention that dreaded word, Brexit. And would we be having a Brexit if there wasn't the sea? We call it the English Channel, between us and the rest of Europe. Now, I'm not looking for an answer to that one, but again, just, you know, the fact of the sea, I'm sure somewhere is tied up in the passion that so many seem to have that Brexit is the best thing that has ever been invented. But I think there are some other more serious things, perhaps, than that. Times when we need to be sober and refer to what's called climate change. Seems to me these days, almost without going into some of the deeper, more technical programs, you don't seem to get past too many of the news broadcasts without some reference to the change to climate that we seem to be doing. And part of that, of course, is what is going to happen if the sea rises and we can't stop it, and places that people enjoy and which is the places of their home at the moment are going to be totally wrecked and washed away. Perhaps we need to ask ourselves, what responsibility should ordinary people, and government particularly, have for these matters that now, I think increasingly, we're beginning to realise we can't just say, oh no, it's somebody just, you know, making mischief. Things that are going to be very difficult, even though maybe it's going to be beyond the lifetime of any of us. I'm not sure that that is an excuse for saying, well, we needn't bother about it, somebody else, because the longer you leave dealing with this climate change, it seems to me, the more difficult it becomes. So, in a sense, it's been good for a moment to just to reflect as Christians and as ordinary people about this marvellous thing which is the sea, and it seems to me that Sea Sunday is a very good way just to look and wonder and enjoy and to say how good it is. Surely we must honour and appreciate, we must respect and treasure, we must guard and preserve the handiwork of our God as we see it in the sea. Let's care, let's respect and enjoy the marvellous gift of the sea. But then I think of words that are almost near the very beginning of the Bible. First chapter of Genesis and chapter 1 and verses 9 and 10. Then God commanded, let the water below the sky come together in one place so that the land will appear, and it was done. He named the land Earth and named the sea, and God was pleased with what he saw. Well, if there's any truth lurking around in that ancient statement, then sea is something that God thinks is precious and valuable and very important. It's actually very interesting to wander through the Bible and see that the sea does get a fair old whack of attention, both through the Old Testament and the New. You can think, for example, of Noah. Well, he knew about water. Or else that crucial moment in the Old Testament story and development when the Exodus took place, and there was some dramatic sea stories hidden away in that. Or we travel on through the Old Testament and somebody called Jonah turns up. And I believe he had some interesting experiences with the sea. And I suppose if we just do a bit of imagination of the map, the Holy Land as we sometimes think of it, well, on the left side, perhaps I should say the west side to be a little more accurate, is, well, there is sea all the way down. It's not all that far away from these places of the Old Testament and particularly the places of Jesus. If we go into the New Testament, again, sea and water are never far away. If you go to the Acts of the Apostles, for example, crossing the sea was a significant step for the spread of the gospel. Get into the middle chapters of the Acts of the Apostles, and it wasn't just going to be in the Holy Land, as we would call it, or just around that. Getting across the sea as the gospel was going to be taken more widely and spread and preached. And even a little bit further in that part of the Acts, there is the call in somebody's dream. It was a vision that eventually came to the great apostle Paul. He heard, "Come over to Macedonia and help us." The spread of the gospel, which has eventually got to us, is something that has meant crossing the sea. Paul, of course, then, if you read towards the end of the book of the Acts, had some pretty lively experiences as he was on a boat to get to Rome. And I think there was at one point a feeling that perhaps they weren't going to get there from some horrific Mediterranean storm. The letter to James, a very peculiar letter, if ever you turn to it. It seems to be sort of breathing different air from the rest of the New Testament. It has that interesting little comment going by the side. James gave some advice about praying. He said, "Whoever doubts is like a wave in the sea that is driven and blown by the wind." Or again, if you're wondering about the sea splashing through the Bible, Old Testament and New, you can go right to the book of Revelation, very near the end of it, where we hear the words, "I saw a new heaven and a new earth. The first heaven and the first earth disappeared, and the sea vanished." And then, of course, the particular reading we had there in the Gospel of Mark. That story that we do know very well indeed, about how Jesus, absolutely exhausted, just flopped down and slept. And he was able to cope with the storm, whereas the others, who were not unfamiliar with the sea, were beginning to think, just this is going to be the end if something isn't done. And that lovely moment when they woke him up and he sort of very confused and said, I suppose in the vernacular, "Oh, shut up," to the storm. And things were very different. And how many people have treasured that story, because we have storms in life, and wonder at the grace and the love of Jesus who will sometimes come and stop them. You could go a little further on in Mark's gospel if you wanted to, where Jesus actually was tempted to walk on the water. And then, something I don't recommend, something many of us should really be trying. I don't think it's quite going to work. But then Peter, of course, didn't want to miss out on this, until, of course, he panicked when he tried. And that's just, again, one of those little incidents worthwhile remembering in the sort of very human and reality business of the sea. So we've pondered the oceans, the seas, and the rivers, and we've reminded ourselves of the sea in the Bible. How might we then sum this up? What is the sea, in effect, saying to us as Christians? Maybe, of course, in the holiday period, this is a particular thing as we encounter the sea in various ways. And we may want to say, "Well, God, are you saying something to me out of this water that seems to be there in abundance and in power and in gentleness and in terror as well?" And perhaps it's a reminder to us. Yes, do it when you are on holiday. And it's that the loveliness of being at the seaside, almost to say, praise God. Praise God for the wonder of this and the beauty of it and the strength of it. And yes, the challenge of it too. We can enjoy and benefit and admire and gasp. But we should also, I believe, as Christians, exercise stewardship and support every intention to make that stewardship real. So on Sea Sunday, having sort of digressed for a while, there's the first thing I'd say, take it from it. Look at the sea and be full of praise and wonder at our invisible God. But it could be more than that, I think, secondly, that the seaside might even provoke us to worship. We look at the seemingly never-ending nature of it. There's the grace and the generosity of God, as it were, laid out for us. We can perhaps be reminded at times of power. The God of the sea isn't only generous, but is a God of might and strength. But also, if we get into the sea, you know, one of those days you're sort of dripping wet and it's not from the sea, and you get in there, isn't it lovely to be washed and cleaned and refreshed? Perhaps not only praise God when we're at the sea, but think of him in his tremendous generosity. Think of him in the mighty power, and think of him in the cleansing that we all need from him. Surely we must care as much as we can for those who work by the sea and not only put their lives in danger but rescue others. And maybe if you're looking for a little bit of work for charity, well, the RNLI perhaps was one that would come to mind. And look out for the boats that sometimes are on display at the seaside. I want to end with a comment that I'm filching from the Methodist Recorder. I noticed on Thursday when it arrived, there was a reference to Sea Sunday. In fact, somebody far better than I am had written a sermon. Now, no, I didn't filch it. I didn't pinch it. And I'll leave you to go away and see, quite if you've got the Methodist Recorder, quite a different sermon. But then I noticed who had written this sermon. Well, you may know that Methodist churches split up into districts, and that we're in the southeast district of the Methodist Church. And for the last 13 years, we've been led by our chair of district, who is just, no, he's not retired, as a lot of people thought. He's got another 5 years, and he's going off to enjoy or serve or frighten the wits out of Gloucester instead. But we have, fortunately, any day now, his replacement turning up. This is the Reverend David Hinchliffe. Some years ago, he was a minister not far from here to our west. They then sent him out to the Channel Islands. Oh dear, the sea again. But he comes back to us, and this sermon was written by him. And so I felt there was something there. I'm not quite sure I've interpreted all the meaning of it, but you will see a very different approach to Sea Sunday, but I felt I wasn't being totally invalid or getting lost if I invited you to join and celebrate the sea this morning. Thank you.